Hey there, and welcome to the September 2019 audio edition of the Year of the Red Door News and Updates. I am William Timothy Murray. In a moment, I'll share my latest news, I'll answer your questions, and I'll talk about a particular theme or aspect of the Year of the Red Door, and I'll share with you a new installment of my Thinking Out Loud series. Keep in mind that most of the offers, discounts, and freebies that I mention in this audio version are only available to subscribers who receive the email version of this newsletter. If you want to get in on those perks, sign up to be a newsletter subscriber at theyearoftheredoor.com. I hope you enjoy this audio edition of the newsletter. Hey there, and welcome to the September 2019 edition of the newsletter. First thing I want to do is make a special announcement. Keep your eye on your inbox. The first puzzler contest is coming your way, and the winner will receive a print copy of any one of my books. It will be winner's choice. The puzzler will be emailed to you within the next few days. And without any further ado, let's just go ahead and jump in to the news and updates. Some of what I've been listening to, Jackson Browne and Greg Allman performing Melissa, the Dixie Chicks performing Traveling Soldier, and Ryan Scott Davis's version of an interesting tune called Telling God He Overspent. Some of what I've been watching, Seam, that's S-E-A-M. It's a science fiction film short. It's pretty good. It's on YouTube. Endeavor, from Masterpiece Mystery, and Midsummer Murders from Acorn TV. Some of what I've been reading, The Poisoner's Handbook by Deborah Bloom, Sailing the Wine Dark Sea by Thomas Cahill, A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles, Should This Exist? What Went Wrong with the World Wide Web and How to Fix It at shouldthisexist.com. Chances are you're not as open-minded as you think, an article which appeared in the Washington Post in August, and How Conversation Builds Character from theartofmanliness.com. Guitar Repair. As some of you already know, I took up guitar repair late last year. Well, I found a home for 8 of the guitars that I've repaired. I got in touch with the education system people in Wheeler County, Georgia, in the U.S., to see if they might want the guitars. And it turns out, just a few weeks earlier, they had been trying to figure out how they might start up a guitar program at the school. But, being the second poorest county in the United States, there was no money to spend on school guitars, and the students certainly couldn't afford to pay for them. Then I came along, out of the blue, with my offer of 8 free guitars. So, in late August, Deirdre and I hit the road and traveled to Wheeler County High School to make the delivery. There we were met and greeted by several teachers, principals, and administrators. I must say that from the moment Deirdre and I arrived at their school, it was wall-to-wall joy. I was deeply touched and humbled by our reception. We hardly knew what to do. Pictures, of course. Lots of excited talk. We all examined the guitars I delivered, and I showed them various things about some of the guitars. And over I was asked, in one way or another, why? Such a blessing, said one administrator. The answer to our prayers, said a teacher. Brandon Pope, the prime mover who was spearheading the effort to start a guitar program, was over the moon with joy. And he wouldn't let me get away without a song swap. So we tuned up a couple of the guitars, and right there in the foyer of the school, I played and sang One of These Days by Neil Young. Then Mr. Pope took up with a fine rendition of Eric Clapton's Before You Accuse Me. It was great. Then, less than 45 minutes after we arrived, it was time for Deirdre and me to depart. On the way home, driving through the vast fields and forests along ribbons of highway, there were long periods of silence in the car, as we contemplated what had just happened. I think Deirdre and I were in as much awe as anyone could be, and every now and then, one of us would say something like, wow. It was a long day, 7 hours behind the wheel, but it was worth every mile. And it made me think. You know, we tend to underestimate the value of our experiences, our skills, and our resources, especially when we compare ourselves to others. Just a few months ago, I would not have guessed that I would be repairing guitars, much less giving them away. And I never, ever suspected that it could mean so much to others. You see, I'm not involved in the music industry. I'm not a member of a band. And at best, I'm a mediocre musician. And I'm certainly not an expert when it comes to repairing guitars. But, as it turns out, there are people who value my very modest skills. Maybe they value them more than I do. Before I decided to give away the guitars, I took the time to think about it and to follow up on the questions I had and to look into the facts. And I learned who I should ask. So, armed with a bit of information, I nervously contacted the folks in Wheeler County. That's the key thing, moving from speculation to investigation. To offer your help, your skills, to others, do your research until you have enough actionable information to move forward. Then, don't wait. Take action. It's always the right time to do the right thing, said Martin Luther King Jr. Put it out there. Put yourself out there. Contact someone. Ask, could you use this? Or, do you know of anyone who needs this? Or, can I give you a hand? It wasn't easy for me, not with all of my hang-ups. I had to get out of my comfort zone. But I learned that even if I am clumsy, grumpy, insecure, shy, and private, well, every once in a while, I can find it in me to step up. And maybe when it comes to doing the right thing, that's what it's all about. About themes. There are many themes and motifs within the Year of the Red Door. In this section, I'll mention one or two of them for you to think about. Why all the good guys? One of the issues of writing fantasy, historical fiction, or even to a certain extent nonfiction, is how we handle the day-to-day. What are the demands that characters face as a result of where and when they live? What must they do to survive? And the problem with those questions when it comes to fantasy, particularly epic fantasy, is that those worlds are not our worlds, and they never have been. And when it comes to writing fantasy, one must select which aspects from our own experience and knowledge of our own world to accept and to put into the story, and which to reject or avoid talking about. One of the major aspects of the Year of the Red Door is that almost all of the people in it are basically decent human beings with good hearts trying to do what they must do, trying to find their way, trying to protect each other. But what does that really mean? It means that as a part of the fantasy, whether stated, understated, or assumed, certain modes of conduct, certain actions are deemed evil by the standards of the time and place of the story. Murder is wrong. So is rape, thievery, deception, incest, and lying. And in the Year of the Red Door, most of the people avoid committing those acts. And when characters deliberately do bad things, other characters seek to bring about some punishment or some justice or retribution. But is that fantasy? Well, if you think the Year of the Red Door is modeled on our own history, then yes, it definitely would be considered fantasy. In our own world, bad people, mostly men, have until recently held sway over all others. They killed without compunction. They raped and robbed because they had the power to do so. They had slaves and held people captive to be treated as property. They routinely abused their wives and children. And if they could get away with it, they lied, cheated, and stole from their neighbors and business partners. Evil wasn't only a personal trait of those bad guys, it was a way of life. Now, since the 1700s, political reforms, religious reforms, and gradual pressure of modern modes of conduct Notions of civil rights and liberties, especially those that were embodied into law, have all acted to somewhat protect people. But powerful high chair tyrants still crop up in spite of our efforts. In the past, tyrants, whether they were politically powerful, criminally powerful, or just bullies at home and at school, simply rolled over the weak. To have a world wherein that kind of thing is the exception is indeed fantasy, and I deliberately made the choice that the world I would explore would be full of good people striving to be good. But being good doesn't mean you've got it easy. Goodness, on a certain level, is difficult. The right choice, though morally easy, is often hard to make because of the circumstances around us. That is, we might know what the right thing is, but doing the right thing is often easier said than done. It's always easier to coast along, or to do that which, narrowly defined, benefits us in the short term at the expense of others, or at the expense of our personal honor. So to write about a world in which most of the people are good is to write about a world that suffers, for suffering is unavoidable. Throughout the Year of the Red Door, we find people striving to do the right thing. They offer their help to others. They strive to protect their families. They grow tired, but keep on going. They have their regrets, too, because, upon reflection, they suspect or know that things might have been different, that they would do things differently than before if they ever had the chance. They have hope. In spite of all of that, the Year of the Red Door remains a tale of good versus evil, of the triumph of good over evil, if not on the battlefield, then in the solitary hearts of the characters. Although they are in the minority, there are powerful individuals who hurt others, who drag others into conflict, who threaten all. There are enough of those characters in the world of the Year of the Red Door to make all of the other characters cautious, to say the least. This is a world where tragedy after tragedy has occurred. The main character lives but a few miles from the site of one of the most horrific massacres that ever took place. Another of the main characters is raped, and another is kidnapped and beaten, and yet another character is betrayed. Even the unknown king, a thief, if ever there was one, is the victim of deception and lies. These acts inform us that the world of the Year of the Red Door is a dangerous place, the kind of place that tests the fortitude of good people. As the author, I find myself identifying with many of the characters, sometimes sympathizing with them. No tears in the writer, no tears in the reader, said Robert Frost. I find this to be true, even if only with an imagined reader. That's because, I'm not ashamed to say it, I myself have wept with my characters upon seeing their anguish, their suffering. But that only really happens when they are no longer mine. I long to relieve Sheila of her pain. I ache to bring comfort to Mr. Ribbon, peace to Lord Talon, healing to Ullen, and love to Isildur. I wish things could be otherwise than they are, but I could not write them to be otherwise. In a sense, it is as if I did not write them at all. Maybe, to quote Frost once again, there is something akin to what he said about poems. Its most precious quality, he said, will remain its having run itself and carried away the poet with it. The reader, too, I hope. So what if I see light's power through all of the darkness? So what if this is a world where most of the people really are good? This is a world where people face the great upheavals brought about by storm or by war or by dizzy change, where they face these happenings with determination and honor. The world of the Year of the Red Door is one wherein it is altogether normal for one individual to truly want others to be safe, healthy, and fulfilled, and they want to help bring that about. So what? I can have my fantasy, can't I? And I can share it with you, can't I? And here's the kicker. Is all that really so much of a fantasy after all? Seeing the glass half full or half empty is a choice we must make. And most of what we are exposed to by social media, the news, and movies tends to nudge us towards seeing the glass as half empty and draining away. But I'm convinced that, these days anyway, the glass is more than half full. And I'm looking forward to the day when all our cups runneth over. Questions and answers. In this section, I'll strive to answer your questions. I might not get to your question right away, so please be patient. David of Montana in the USA asks, what is the weirdest source for an idea in your writing? And what is the weirdest source for a character? Well, David, those are good questions. I had to really think about them, but I'm not sure I have a good answer for you. You be the judge, okay? To me, characters always start out as ideas, sometimes fairly vague, until I get some writing under my belt. Some of my characters are a bit demure or shy to show themselves fully to me, and others burst forth fully in full detail. And it seems like when I least expect it or want it, characters just sort of show up and start making demands, like petulant actors. So maybe that's kind of weird. And it's always a bit scary and aggravating. If you've seen the movie The Man Who Invented Christmas, you'll know what I mean. Rarely is there a cooperative character. They're all such prima donnas, if you ask me, and some are downright belligerent. More than once, when I had to take a break to take care of other things, I would leave off writing right in the middle of a situation. So imagine my wife asking about what I was working on, and I'd say something like, oh, Robbie, Ellen, and the rest are just mulling around, waiting for me to come back. Or I'd say something like, I left Robbie dangling over the side of a cliff. He's stewing about it, but serves him right. Let him dangle for a while. As far as ideas for plot turns, scenes and passages or situations, that's another matter altogether. Take settings, for example. They don't come to me. I go to them. Sort of the reverse of what happens with characters. Except, of course, that characters are usually doing things in those settings when I arrive, and not necessarily what I want them to do, mind you. But I digress. Back to non-character matters. Weird sources. Well, does personal experience count as a weird source? Because there are an awful lot of passages in The Year of the Red Door that are based on personal experiences. There was that time when my sailboat nearly capsized in an awful storm that passed over the small lake that I was on. Lightning, high winds, torrential rain, waves that moved in every direction at the same time. So when I wrote the passage in The Nature of a Curse about the storm on Lake Howgeth, believe me, I was there all over again. Is that weird? Or what about the time back when I was a kid, when I quite nearly fell down an abandoned well? I don't even like thinking about it. The horror of how close I came, and imagining what it might have been like to actually fall into the well, sure gave me some ideas about how to write a particular passage in a distant light. And I've had some fairly terrifying nightmares. Once, when I was about 16 or so, I had a dream that was so disturbing that I got up in the middle of the night, maybe 2 or 3 in the morning, and walked a few miles just to look around inside a particular building on the nearby college campus. That building was the setting for the nightmare I'd had. When I got there, I found the front doors open. Now that was odd. I went in, dead quiet inside. It was an old building with a theater auditorium. I walked past the box office and on into the darkness of the auditorium. I took a seat and watched and listened. My eyes soon adjusted to the gloom, and I could plainly see the stage, the front curtains drawn back. No one came. Nothing happened. I got up and walked down the aisle and into the side stage door, up the steps and onto the stage. I stood center stage, looking out at the empty auditorium. No sound. Nothing stirred. But the nightmare was still fresh in my mind. Now, I remember trying to calm my breathing because, to my ears, I was breathing hard and loud. Then I went backstage. It was dark, but there were emergency exit signs here and there that glowed sort of dully. I'm not sure what I was looking for, but I half expected to find something really bad. I looked into every dressing room. I went to the prop room and walked around among the castle sets and armament racks and fake trees. Nothing. So, okay, I was only a kid at the time, and back then I was stupid enough to lean into fear instead of letting discretion be the better part of valor. It was a long time ago. But I do recall having the irresistible urge when I woke from that nightmare to go see for myself if the dream was true and, if it was, to do what I could about whatever situation I might find. Many years later, I recalled that nightmare and the little excursion in the wee hours. It helped me write about the prince riding hard through the snow-flecked night in To Touch a Dream, and about what he did when he got to his destination. The princely man put several children onto his saddle, and leading his horse along by the reins, he helped an elderly man who was blind. "It was foretold to me that you would come," said the old man in a low voice. "I do not see how it could have been known," replied the gentleman, "since I myself did not know until this very evening." "I had a dream," said the blind elder, "and in my dream I was told by a kind voice to give up my place in the East Market, where I have begged for nigh 40 years, and take up a place here, nearby to the gates of the palace. In my dream I was told that the king himself would send for me and would give me relief from my misery." "I am not the king," said the gentleman. "Then you are sent by him." "I hardly think so, for I have never seen the king, nor have I had any word from him or any of his ministers. How I come to do this is by dream, too. I will not relate it to you, but it was terrible and beautiful. And now I do that which I must do, and that I ought to have done long ago." "Then you heard the voice of the same king that I heard." So, David, I hope that I have answered you somewhat, but I will continue to ponder your questions. And thank you very much for asking. It's easy to ask a question. All you have to do is write to me at asktheauthor@penflightbooks.com. Thinking out loud. In this section, I'll try to talk to you about whatever happens to be on my mind. Think of it as a kind of editorial essay. I might reminisce or vent. I might rail against something or other. Or I might just think out loud. Deja vu all over again. Can that be right? A lot has happened since my last full email newsletter. The planet has traveled far with all its passengers, and the seasons have turned and turned again. Once more, I have been pondering time and space with its attendant history. We have spun farther away from the past. We have traveled a little farther along on our cosmic journey. Distance is something that, when measured by time, is necessarily also a measure of space. For example, consider the star Rukba in the constellation Cassiopeia. You've probably never heard of it, but if you go outside and look at it, you will be seeing light that began its journey to Earth the same year that Walt Disney got his first job as an animator. That was in January of 1920. A lot has happened since those photons began hustling toward us, but when they started out, around 1920 or so, our planet wasn't even here. We were, in fact, some 122.5 trillion miles away. That's roughly how far we've been dragged by our sun as it orbits the Milky Way. In other words, the light of Rukba that meets our eye tonight has intersected with us, sort of like an arrow aimed ahead of a moving target. We are traveling through millions of such intersections every single day. And I don't just mean that metaphorically. Every moment is a different point of space. Every measure of space has its own unique moment. You can't really separate the two, since they are really just different aspects of the same thing. So my mind goes, pondering the time-space which is existence, wondering about my life and its course through the cosmos. As convenient as it might be to think of it as a kind of straight line, it has not been straight. My life, and yours too probably, has been like a spiral, or maybe a pinball, or maybe like a planet encircling the gravity of history, like our Earth circles the sun, being dragged along, kicking and screaming sometimes. In the Northern Hemisphere, autumn has arrived. It is like the opening curtain of a play that will soon commence, called winter, when it will be a time for reflection, for dreams, for crystal skies at night, and for fantasy. I am ready. The year has made me weary and sore. All this hurtling through time-space wears me out. But then, maybe that's what it takes, sometimes, to make me see things as they are, and not as I wish them to be. In olden days, shamans, medicine men, and priests used strong drink, hallucinogens, or relentless physical exertion to break down the set-in-stone worldview of their students and initiates. It was strong medicine, intended to weaken perception enough to create the paradox of illusions. And it was through illusions, deftly manipulated, that the initiate broke free of his bias, broke through the stubborn barriers of how I see things, and opened the way for seeing how things are. This year has been like that. And I have been here before, exactly a year ago, to be sure, 2 years ago, and on back as far as I can remember. Summers always wear me out. I have never liked them much. Oh, I am always ready for warm days, days when I no longer have to trouble with coats or gloves. But in the American South, where I live, summer weather arrives too soon and does not take its leave in a timely manner, if you ask me. It's rather irritating. So during these months, on this side of the sun, I am never as pleasant as I ought to be. But you see the flaw in my thinking, don't you? I really haven't been here before. It's just a convenient illusion to think so. This is the only time I have ever been here. The only time I have ever visited this point of time-space. And that's what I've really been wondering about. I don't like being grumpy, but I can't help it. My patience wears thin. I get behind on my chores, and I wonder if I'll ever catch up with things. I'm not satisfied with my writing, and I wonder if any of it even matters to anyone. Lately, I haven't been getting very many emails or questions from readers, hint, hint. It's just a hiatus, probably because of the time of year. I only work in isolation, but sometimes even I start wondering if there's anybody out there. Sometimes I jump up and push open the heavy barn door and gaze out. Startled deer bound away into the woods, rabbits scoot into the cover of the hedge, and squirrels zigzag back and forth, unable to decide where to go. The squirrels make me laugh, because sometimes I can relate. And what's the point of not having a sense of humor about it all? Yes, everything is absurd, so hard, so sad, but so very beautiful too. Lately, clear blue skies have kept me going. The music of the heavens, chorales and adagios, they ring and hum in my mind through sleep and into the next day. I'm one of the lucky ones. I can hear the stars. Most people can only see them, which is beautiful enough, but that's like seeing a captivating dancer, without hearing the music. So I willingly descend into the cold months to come, and with my own share of contentment and peace, in a greater quantity than I deserve, surely. I am reminded once again by this season of increasing dark that the joke's on us. I'm reminded of how puny we are, and that we might as well laugh. We might as well hold hands and work together. We might as well be kind. We might as well love. That's the only way I know of to make sense of it. And that's another paradox, because I really don't need to make sense of it, which is good, because I can't do the impossible. And after all, in a few months, we'll be billions of miles away from here anyway, farther on down the cosmic road. And that's what I've been thinking about. Thanks for letting me think out loud. Okay, that almost wraps things up for this edition of the newsletter. But don't forget about your current freebies. You can download whichever ones you want by following the links in the email edition of the newsletter, which should be in your inbox. And keep an eye on that inbox, because the puzzler is coming your way. Well, that's it for now. Remember, you can get in touch with me by using the Ask the Author form at theyearoftheredoor.com. Or you can just write to me at asktheauthor@penflightbooks.com. I'll get back to you just as soon as I can. Meanwhile, stay safe, be productive, and enjoy beautiful things. Thanks so much. The music you are listening to is West Wind by Prior Meadows. This has been a Penflight Books production. Visit, explore, and browse theyearoftheredoor.com.